Welcome to the Embodiment Conference 2020, also on behalf of the whole team behind the scenes. Thank you for your attention to another amazing presentation about intimacy and relationship. My name is Ilan Stefani and it's my pleasure to be sponsoring this channel, as I deeply believe that aliveness, embodiment, intimacy, relationship are key to individual and global change. My ongoing somatic research is focused on more and more aliveness for each and every one of us. I tune into the fields of collective trauma, of intimacy, of love and rage, shadow work, and higher level of energy. If you are curious about my work, you might want to catch my presentation on this channel as well as on the main stage. And you can also head over to my website, ilanstefani.com. My methods have been described as an embodiment training for warriors. However, you are so welcome to find out yourself. I teach online and in person. I teach in German as well as in English. Thank you for your attention and please enjoy the following presentation.
So welcome, Mike. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Thanks, Liana.
Yeah, so for those of you that don't know Mike is the founder of Psychosexual Somatics Therapy, which is a combination of psychotherapy, neuroscience, and bodywork. He's a psychotherapist, a clinical sexologist, and international teacher, and author of Real Sex, Why Everything You've Learned About Sex is Wrong. So Mike, I hand it over to you.
Liana, thank you. I just want to kind of take in all of you, those that I can see and those that I can't. So thank you for joining me here in this. I feel really honored to be on this platform, and welcome to all of you. I wanted to share something that I'm really passionate about, which is the importance of embodiment and global change. And it's partly my own story and partly, I think, part of a much bigger picture. I'm probably best known to many of you for working in the field of sexual healing, but I've had a career before that, and indeed, in a sense, a career that's kind of evolved out of that. Because before I was working in that sexual healing field, I was working in the corporate world. In fact, I was working in investment banking, which seems so distant from what I do now. So I was a kind of hard ass guy on a trading floor, and I was completely in my head, very mentally identified, really disconnected from my body, really using my mind to kind of win intellectual arguments and, you know, overpower sometimes with my mind. And, you know, it was working to a certain extent, but there was also something that I really realized that it wasn't working. And I realized that what I was missing was connection to myself and actually deeper connection to others. And so I embarked on this journey of leaving that corporate world and exploring therapy, exploring my sexuality, exploring Tantra and Taoist practices, amongst many other things. And what I realized is that this journey of feeling that there's something missing, of feeling this disconnect, it wasn't just my journey. I think it's a journey that many of us, perhaps all of us in different ways, are experiencing. And that disconnect is a collective story. It's the disconnect that we experience from ourselves, and it's the disconnect, when we disconnect from ourselves, it's the disconnect we experience from others. And for me, it feels like the importance of this has never been more pressing. It's never been more relevant, because I think pretty much I could imagine all of us here at this conference would agree that we're in a global situation right now, which is alarming. We're in a situation where old paradigms are falling apart, where we're beginning to realize quite painfully that things aren't working. And for me, the core of this is disconnect. It's as we get a society that becomes more and more polarized, whether that's politically between left and right, whether that's, you know, issues between black and white or masculine and feminine or men and women or, you know, any of these things, whether it's between humanity and the planet, between humanity and nature, there's a huge disconnect that's going on right now. And for me, it's this disconnect that is at the root of all of the problems. And of course, when we think about the global situation, it's instantly, most of us will have the response of like, wow, that's scary and overwhelming. That's a scary situation. And what happens when we experience fear is that we go into contraction. If you think about a scary situation, what typically happens is we kind of go, oh, and we contract. We withdraw our energy inwards in some way. And it's that disconnect that creates the illusion of separation. It creates the illusion that I'm me and you're you and you're a separate being and I'm different. That I'm white and you're not. I'm a man and you're not. I'm human and you're not. And that sense of otherness is really what's, for me, is what's driving that whole disconnect. And the paradigm really radically needs to shift right now. And what I've seen is that in the psychotherapeutic journey that I've taken and in the psychotherapeutic work that I offer, that what happens is we split parts of ourselves off. We disconnect from parts of ourselves because they feel uncomfortable. And because we feel that we're uncomfortable with them, we kind of shelve them away, we put them away somewhere else, and we like to create a split and a separation that says, I'm this, I'm not that. I'm a happy person, I never get angry. Or, I'm a scared person, I don't have lots of courage. So we create this splitting inside ourselves. And what we've manifest now in the planet is our inner splits have become our outer reality. These splits and separations that we're experiencing, for me, are a projection, they're an extension of our internal experience of what is separate and what is split off in us. And I think if we continue down that path, it's going to potentially be catastrophic. So the question is, what do we do about this? We live in an age where there is so much complexity that no one person has the answers. No individual knows how to resolve the issues that we're facing at a global level. And so it's beholden on us to stay in connection, because it's only through connection that we can come up with collective solutions. What we need, the opposite of the splitting that we're experiencing, is integration. People sometimes say, this is the time of the rise of the feminine. I don't agree. If it's the time for the rise of the feminine, we're in trouble. Just as much as we're in trouble when it was the time of the rise of the masculine. They're just polarities. One is not better than the other. One has benefits and disadvantages. The other has benefits and disadvantages. But as long as we stay in the paradigm of binary opposites, or even a spectrum of opposites, then we're creating splitting and separation. And so what's needed for me is a sense of integration between left and right, integration between masculine and feminine. We need to be able to find our inner masculine and our inner feminine. And I'm not talking about whether you've got one set of genitals or another or something in between. I'm talking about archetypal energies that we all hold within us. And we can have a conversation about whether they're social constructionist issues or not, but I'm going to say that they are and they're not, because even arguing that they're social constructions is creating a splitting. So we need to acknowledge that there are, for example, archetypal energies around mother and father. They don't have to be male and female. It's got nothing to do with it. There are archetypal energies around energy and consciousness. They exist. There are polarities that exist in the universe. And there's also a spectrum that exists. They also, these polarities, when they come through our human form, are part of a social construct. So it feels really important for me to be able to hold both, to be able to hold the fact that there are these binary opposites and there is a spectrum of experience and reality. it's integration that's needed right now, because it's integration that allows us to create wholeness. So when we split stuff off, we separate and we create disintegration. So that solution is integration. And we do that by connecting. Now, when I first started to work in the field after I left my corporate career, I worked very, very kind of at the cutting edge of the field of sexual healing. And I developed a model called psychosexual somatics therapy, PST for short. It's a terrible name. It's far too long. And I regret it every day I say it. But PST is the modality that I developed. And I developed it because I wanted to support people to help them resolve issues around sexuality. But the more that I looked at it, what I realized is that sexual issues actually arise out of dysregulation of the nervous system. If your nervous system is overactivated in fear or underactivated in a kind of collapse, it's very hard to be in sexual intimate connection and to feel that flow of life force energy. So sexual issues arise out of dysregulation of the nervous system. What causes the dysregulation of the nervous system? That's either developmental attachment trauma or event trauma. And I'm going to say that almost all, in my experience, event trauma has its roots in early attachment trauma. One of the key ideas that we embrace in PST is the idea that there's something called a first wave and a second wave. So second wave is the stuff that is happening to us now as adults. First wave is the my relationship isn't working. Second wave is my relationship isn't working. Second wave is I don't have orgasms or I don't have a relationship or I can't get an erection or all the kind of issues that present in our adult lives. But those are all just replays of things that we've experienced in our childhood. And that's what we call the first wave. And all of those are attachment issues. So when we want to resolve the issues that come around adult relating, sexuality, intimacy, and relationship, what we really need to do is we need to track back and look at where the nervous system is out of kilter and look at the origins of that in our childhood. So when you go back into that stuff, what you find is that there are ways that we are showing up in the world that we learned in our childhood that cause us to come into disconnection. And the thing is that we disconnected before we even knew we were doing it. Because as children, we don't have a construct of connection and disconnection. Either my friend likes me or my friend doesn't like me, or you're not my friend. But we don't have a construct of connection and disconnection. Very often, these things even arise before we have the capacity to speak. They're pre-verbal. So most of the attachment issues happen within the first 7 years of our life. It's galling for those of us who are parents to think that if our child is older than 7 years old, we've probably already imprinted them with their lifelong issues until they work on them and resolve them. But this stuff starts really, really young. And so we start to disconnect in different ways, and we have different strategies for it. I'm sure most, if not all of you, have heard of things like fight, flight, and freeze. And in PST, there are seven different categories that we use of ways, strategies, you can say, that we have for disconnecting. And really, you can kind of boil down human interactions to these seven ways of disconnect or human relational problems to these seven ways of disconnecting. But then you might say, well, here we are. We're all wanting love and connection. Why are we doing this stuff? We're behaving in these ways because we have an absolute terror of the felt experience that we had as a child when something went wrong. So what causes those, what we would call avoidant behaviors in PST, is actually the fact that we have core needs in our childhood that were unmet. So in our childhood, we have the need for connection and contact. We have the need to be nurtured and nourished and kept safe. We have the need to be able to have trust and safety. We have the need also to be able to individuate ourselves and say, I'm me, I'm not you. I want to do what I want to do, not what mummy wants me to do. And we have the need also to feel our aliveness, our eros energy. And even as children, we experience that eros energy, that sexual aliveness. Of course, it doesn't usually take the same form as it does in adults, but you can see it in children. The way that they play, the way they move their bodies, it's a celebration of their aliveness, unless something happens that inhibits that. And of course, we all have those smaller or greater experiences of that. So when we track all this stuff back, what we need to see is, what are the root causes that are triggering our avoidant behaviors? What was the need that we had that was unmet? And when we go to that, we go right back to the root of the first wave. And in doing that, we really start to unwind all of those patterns. So part of the big problem of disconnect is that we don't only disconnect from other people, but we also connect from ourselves. And I don't mean just psychologically, but we disconnect from our body. Why do we disconnect from our body? Because it's uncomfortable in here, because we feel things that we don't want to feel. Very simply, I say that we call these things feelings because we feel them in our body. So if a client comes into the room and says, I feel sad, I'll say, well, how do you know that? How do you know you feel sad? I've got a lump in my throat. I've got a tightness around my heart. I feel angry, they say. How do you know? I've got all this energy rushing up the front of my chest, or my shoulders feel really tight. So we can look at any emotion and we can track it into the body and see what happens in the body when you experience it. And then you can see why you disconnect. And basically there's four reasons that we disconnect from the body. The first is that we experience uncomfortable emotions. The second is that we have some kind of trauma, which is kind of overwhelming for the system. The third is that we feel something else in our body that hasn't been allowed, and that's called sexual energy, and that isn't allowed in many contexts. So, you know, sex, people who say that the mind is the biggest sexual organ are really missing the whole point of the operation, because in order to have good sex, you need to be really in your body. And kind of that's the essence of the takeaway of the book that I wrote with my wife, Louise, is about embodiment and coming into presence. So feeling sexual energy is the third reason that we don't come into our body. And the fourth reason is because we have some kind of birthing trauma. And we all, to a certain extent, have some kind of birthing trauma, no matter. Very, very, very few people have the kind of blissful, joyful, relaxed, natural birth that we are designed ideally to have. And so that act of coming into the world teaches us that the body isn't a safe place to be. And so we start to disconnect from it. So if we want to start healing our connections with others, we have to start healing our connections with ourselves. And we need to do that by first starting to connect with the body. The other really important thing about the body is that research has shown recently that if you want to create behavioral change, you do it through creating positive neural growth. The fastest and most effective way to create positive neural growth is to have an experience that operates at three different levels. That's physical, emotional, and mental. So positive, good sexual experience is an example of something that fits those three categories. Hopefully, you're having a good physical experience, you have an emotional sense, an emotional connection, you have pleasure and joy, and you have a mental construct of, yes, this is fun and I'm doing this nice thing with a lovely person. So when we have these three things all connected together at the same time, that's the way that we create the fastest possible positive neural growth, which in turn creates the most effective behavioral change. So in order to heal ourselves, psychotherapy is a very useful tool, but it's very limited. Because in order to heal ourselves, we really need to include the body in the healing process. And we need to be able to allow ourselves to feel safe in our body. And of course, there's a whole channel on this embodiment conference about trauma and all of that stuff. And that's also very much informing the PST and my approach to things. because basically we have the experience that our body is not a safe place to be for one of these four reasons that I've outlined. And what we need to do is give ourselves the experience that, okay, in this moment, my body is safe. And there's an important distinction between I feel safe and I am safe. So some of you sitting here as I'm talking about this might be feeling like, oh yeah, but I don't want to go into my body. It doesn't feel like a good place to be. You might not feel totally safe about that. But it's important to make a distinction between that internal experience, the feeling of I don't feel safe, and the external reality of I am safe. So if you start to feel anxious in this talk or any time, just let yourself take a look around the space that you're in and check your reality. It's what I call the reality check. It's really simple, but it's really effective. Ask yourself the question, am I safe in this moment? And in this moment is an important part of that statement or that question, because the mind is a radar for danger. The mind cannot be in the present. The mind analyzes and remembers the past, or it analyzes and prepares for the future. What the mind is really rubbish at doing is being present. So the mind is going, yes, but I'm safe now, but someone could walk through that door at any moment. But keep asking yourself, is that happening in this moment? So just keep coming back to the present, coming back to the present. It's really useful, really important, really simple, powerful tool. So, of course, a lot of us have trauma. These are, you know, reasons that we don't want to get into the body. But we need to remind ourselves that we can have the experience of being safe in our body. It's creating islands of safety in our psyche and in our felt experience. And gradually over time, you know, we develop more and more islands. The water level of the fear and trauma sinks, and more of the solidity of our ground is exposed, if you like. We sit on more solid ground. So that's kind of part of the work of coming into connection with yourself and by extension with others. So, okay, so far it's all interesting, and maybe there's some new ideas, maybe there's some familiar ideas for you, but I'd like to invite us into an experiential exercise. So we're probably going to take 10, 15 minutes with that. And so what I'd like you to invite you to do is to, in a moment, let me just talk you through the process first, and you can decide if you want to join or not, is in a moment to close your eyes, bring your awareness inside, and think of a situation that's been challenging for you, particularly perhaps in relation to being in connection with someone in a relationship, maybe in a sexual experience. Please don't choose something that feels like, oh, this is a great opportunity to work with my biggest trauma. It's not. Please be gentle with yourself. Rule number one of any self-help is be gentle with yourself. Okay. So pick something that's caused you a little bit of stress, a minor niggle that you have with a partner or something like that. Not something that is going to overwhelm your nervous system, because that's simply not going to help. Okay. So also know that you're responsible for your own experience, and you can take yourself in this process as deeply as you want and come out as much as you want. So if you want to come out, open your eyes if they were closed, take a look around the room or the space that you're in, remind yourself, I'm safe in this moment, or ask yourself, check with yourself, am I safe in this moment? And I'm hoping that, you know, there's no actual physical threat to you in this moment in any of the spaces that you're in. So also, if you just bring your awareness outside rather than to the internal sensations in your body, that can also help to reduce anxiety as well. So, you know, open your eyes and have a look around. If you want to go deeper, deepen your breath a little bit, close your eyes, really focus on the internal experience. And I'm going to invite you into some movement. If you want to go deeper, deepen the movement. So if the movement is to do this, really do this. That will take you deeper into the experience. If you don't want to go so deep, make smaller movements. So in this way, you're in complete control of the process at all times. So be gentle with yourselves. This is really about being curious, about listening to the wisdom of your body, about allowing your body to have a different experience. All right. So let's start. I'd like to invite you, if you feel comfortable, just to close your eyes and get into a position that feels comfortable. And you can do this sitting, standing, or lying, whatever feels good for you. There's no prescribed way to do this. So just closing your eyes if you feel okay to, and just noticing your breath, just to help you anchor, come down into your body. Letting yourself feel supported by whatever you're sitting or lying on. Letting the busyness of your mind and the outside world just drop away, just for a few moments, as you invite your awareness to turn inside. And just deepen your breath a little bit, so you're consciously breathing as far down into your body, perhaps down into your belly, if you can do that. If you can't, don't worry. But just consciously bringing the awareness down. Now I want to invite you to recall that situation that's been a little bit challenging. Again, please don't go into your worst trauma of your life, just something that's caused you a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of an argument with a partner or a niggle or a small thing that's made you feel a little uncomfortable. And just notice what happens in your body when you connect with the memory of that experience. Remember, the thing isn't happening right now, you're just recalling it. You'll notice that your body has an impulse if you tune into it. It'll likely want to change posture or make a gesture or a movement. So allow your body just to make that movement. Let your body follow through with that. Really give it permission to do that. Very often we say, oh, I want to contract, but I shouldn't contract. Just give yourself permission in this moment to contract or to expand, whatever it is. Notice what happens to your breath when you go into that imagined situation again and allow your body to express. Remember to keep breathing. Okay, so now I want to invite you slowly and consciously to come out of that position. That's what we call the first position. So come out of that first position and come back to neutral. And then let your body move into whatever the opposite is. So if there was a movement to the left, let your body make a movement to the right. If there was contraction, let there be expansion. So slowly and consciously, let your body do the opposite. And remember to keep breathing into this as well. And just notice, just observing this experience. Okay. So now we call that the second position. So now letting go of the second position, let yourself come back through neutral with your movement and come back into the first position. And if you want to go deeper in this, just go a little deeper into it. If you want to go deeper, just exaggerate a little bit the physical movement. And see if there's anything that your body wants to say from this place. Maybe it wants to tell you something. Maybe it wants to ask you something. Remember to keep breathing. Now let's let go of the first position again. Come back very slowly. Let it take several seconds to come back through neutral. And coming back into the opposite, into the second position. Again, breathing, allowing yourself to go into this fully. and just see what's here. If this posture or gesture or movement could speak to you, what would it say? Just let yourself hang out here for a little while, just observing what you experience. See if this place has any message for you or anything it wants to ask. Okay, and let's let go of this slowly and then consciously moving back again through neutral. We'll just go one last time into the first position. Keeping in mind that situation that was triggering you in the first place, just holding it gently and lovingly. And again, maybe if you want to go deeper, just deepening the posture, deepening the movement. And see if there's anything here that wants to be expressed. Keep breathing, just allowing, just saying yes to whatever the internal experience is, as much as you feel comfortable to. Now let's slowly come out of this for the last time, going back again through neutral and back into the second position. And let yourself really fully embody this. And just notice what's here. If there's anything else needs to be spoken or asked from this place, maybe there's a gift or a quality that you want to take back with you. Okay, now let's come out of this second position and just slowly and consciously come back into neutral again. And I want to invite you to place out your hands, palm up if you want to do that. And imagine you've got the first position in one hand and the second position in the other hand. And just let yourself look at these two places. They're both parts of you. They're both parts of your experience. And just let yourself look from one to the other. Yeah, this is a part of my experience. And this is a part of my experience. Maybe you can see the quality in each of these that it's trying to give you, the gift in each of these. Maybe one was trying to keep you safe. Maybe one was trying to connect, whatever it is. But allow yourself to experience, yeah, I have this, and I have this, and I am more than those. And if you feel comfortable to, you can let one hold the other, one hand resting in the other, whichever way you want to do that, and then bring them up into your heart, the placing your hands physically on your heart. Letting yourself embrace both these parts of yourself. You are both these, and you are the consciousness that is witnessing, that is experiencing both of these, and more. Just allow your awareness to expand beyond your physical body. Just connecting energetically with the circle of people around the world in this virtual room right now, if you feel comfortable to do that. And feel the gift of connection, feel the gift of sharing a space with people from all around the world who have come with the purpose of exploring, inquiring, learning, growing, connecting. Feel the planetary dimension of that. Feel the energy moving through the circle here. Just allow the possibility that it's okay to connect. And you can still be you. Thank you all. So I want to just invite you to come back into yourself, come back into your bodies fully, maybe just pat the outside of your arms and the outside of your thighs, just to remind yourself that, yeah, I've got this physical body. Here I am. Take a look around the space that you're in. Just remind yourself, oh, yeah, here I am. And I'm still safe in this moment. I'm very much hoping. I can't see all of you, but I'm hoping you are. Yeah. Thank you for joining me in that little practice. One of the things that I love about this, I mean, the gentleness for me seems really, really important. And healing comes from not through smashing through defenses, because defenses exist for a reason. There's a reason that we've developed these armors emotionally, psychologically, physically. And they deserve to be respected and honored. So, you know, what I found is that the best way to heal those things is not to de-armor, is not to push through or break through defenses, but with loving presence, just allow them to melt. Because when you're really present with yourself, the defenses melt. And if you can allow them to melt in yourself, you can come into connection with others, and then other people's defenses melt as well. There's no forcing, there's no pushing needed in any of this. It's just very, very gentle. And something else that's really key here for me in this process is going with what is as our internal experience. When I was studying Tantra, something that people would often say is Tantra is saying yes to everything. And I was like, yeah, but I don't want to say yes to everything, because I don't want to do that thing. And I don't want to be with that person. I don't want to do that. But what I realized is that the real meaning is saying yes to what's inside. It's saying yes to our inner experience. So in this practice, what we're doing is we're listening to the wisdom of the body and we're going with it. So if the body wants to contract, you let it contract. If the body wants to expand, you let it expand. When you go with this impulse, it's like something gets completed. Very often, the body wants to do a thing, but oh, I shouldn't do that thing because that would be weird, or it would be embarrassing, or I would lose control, or whatever. And so the impulse remains, but we don't allow it to complete. Alan Watts has a wonderful phrase, which I love, which is, it's all retch and no vomit. So we never actually get the fulfillment of throwing up, as it were. But when we allow ourselves to really follow the impulse, not to vomit necessarily, but to follow that impulse of the body, then something completes in our system. And our system says, yes, I've been seen. Everything wants to be seen. So when it's seen, it can relax. Otherwise, it's like a little child going, me, 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 me. I need some attention. And we're going, no, quiet, stop. I can't give that attention right now. But there's the deep longing for it. So everything wants to be seen. Let that impulse be there. Let yourself follow through with it. And then what happens when we allow ourselves to go into the fullness of that movement, of that impulse, is that when it releases, we create expansion. We create possibilities. What typically happens in our bodies and in our relational dynamics and often in our sexual arena is that we feel that there's only this way to be. This is the only possible way that I know how to be. And what we're doing here is by allowing the body to go into the contraction, the expansion, let's say, we're showing the body that there's other possibilities. And those other possibilities are what allows us to stay connected with ourselves so that we don't just have the narrative, I can only be this way. It's creating those possibilities that allows positive neural growth, behavioral change, and ultimately connection. So it's really, really key to allowing ourselves to come into connection with ourselves first and then with others. And the more places you know and can inhabit in yourself, the more you'll be able to be with other people in those places in themselves. That means that you don't have to run away or get triggered or get reactive when people show up in ways that you don't like, because you can just be with that and stay in connection. And ultimately, I feel like what I'm really interested in is helping people to live lives of love and purpose. And that requires connection. Purpose isn't something that exists independent of others. Love isn't something that exists independent of others. And so, you know, if we want those things, we have to be available and open to being in connection. And I want to say that, you know, connection is important because we need the collective consciousness. We need to evolve our consciousness. We need to stay in connection so that we can collectively heal the traumas that we've experienced in the past. A lot of people, I'm sure, in this virtual room and other spaces are tapped into various elements of collective trauma. Collective trauma is not something we need to try and resolve on our own. It's something we need to resolve collectively. To try and say, I'm going to take all the pains of all of the women in the world, all the guilt of all the male abusers in the world. It's way too much, or the pain of the whole planet. Don't go there, people. It's a really bad idea. It will fry your system. Do it in groups. Do it in collectives. Do it in communities. It's the only way to heal this stuff. So evolve our consciousness, stay in connection, build communities, and embody. And the embodiment is key, because the body is an extension of the self. The body, I like to say, the body is us, our soul and our history made visible. When you touch someone's body, you're not just touching an arm or a leg or a genital, you're touching their soul made material, palpable matter. And it's really, really essential to remember that in a touch context. But also, our body is not separate than our environment. If you try living without air, water, food, the ground that you walk on, if you lived in the vacuum of space, you'd live about, I don't know what the number is, but 1 minute, 2 minutes, you wouldn't get very far anyway. So our body exists not in independence from nature and the environment, but it belongs and exists in relation to it. And the more we get into our bodies, the more we're sensitive to our environment. So when you're tuned into your body, you can feel like, I don't want to breathe that air, it's polluted. I don't want to eat that food, it's synthetic. I don't want to drink that drink, it doesn't make my body feel good. Our body is an extension of nature, and nature is an extension of our body. And ultimately, what we need to do is heal our connection with the planet, because that is a very finite trajectory that we are on right now in terms of our disconnect from nature and the planet. The idea that man has dominion over all things on Earth is a seriously flawed construct. Man is a product of the planet, and we need ultimately to come into connection with nature, with the environment, and we can only truly do that if we're in connection with our bodies. So this is the way that we can change our reality. This is the way that we can manifest a new paradigm of growing together, evolving together, and coming back into connection with self, with other, and with planet. Thank you all. That's all I have to say about that. Well, that actually isn't, but that's all I have to say today.
Thank you. It has been really, really beautiful. And I'm just scrolling through the chat, and people are coming up with some really great feedback about integrating the polarities and how profound this experience was, and really, really great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, everybody.
And we have some questions come through, actually.
Yeah, I would love to answer any questions that people have. If you're interested in my work, you can find out about it on mikelusada.com, or also the modality that I developed is called psychosexualsomatics.com. And we run a 6-month, my wife Louise and I is also a transpersonal psychotherapist as well. We run a 6-month coaching program. And it's a deep, beautiful journey, not only training you professionally as coaches, but also as going deeply, deeply into your own process, because you can't take others to the places that you haven't been in yourself. So if people would be interested in that, please contact me. I'd love to talk about it with you all.
Great. And I think Gabby has already posted some of the links, and she will be posting everything.
Great, Gabby. Thank you. That's wonderful. Yeah.
So, yeah, the first question coming from Robin is, when sex has stopped completely, how can we reignite a joint, a collaborative journey with our partners if they're not open to any kind of body, mind, spirit therapy or personal growth?
It's a great question. It's a tough situation. The first thing, the key word that you said it already there is collaborative. You need to be in a collaborative alliance with your partner. You both need to want this and be able to, you know, face the uncomfortable things that are going to come up when you start looking at your relationship with intimacy. Remember, all this stuff stems from your attachment wounds. So, you know, these are the deep-seated fears and vulnerabilities that we all hold. And so what you can do, of course, you can never control someone else's response, but what you can do is you can invite them. And you can invite them by telling them what you want to get from that journey that you want to share with them. So if you say, you know, I want to have more sex with you, that's probably not going to persuade them if they're not interested in having more sex with you. But if you say, I would really love for us to be closer and more connected, to deepen our relationship, to grow and evolve, and I see sexuality as part of that, and I'd love to explore this journey with you, you're more likely to get a positive response. It's very difficult with partners who aren't open in some ways, but if you show them the benefits, sell the benefits, they say in marketing, right? So sell them what they're gonna get from coming on this journey with you. This is what I think we'll you know, where we can be, where we can end up, if you take this journey with me. And ultimately, it's hard, but sometimes people aren't willing to look at their fear. Their fear is greater than their desire for connection or their willingness to change. And in those cases, you need to make a decision whether living in that relationship is something that you're willing to continue and what the cost of that is to you, or whether you need to make a different decision. And of course, that's difficult. I'm not saying there's an easy answer to that, but at least you'll be in conscious choice about it. And that's the best way that you can empower yourself.
Great, thank you, Mike. The next question coming from Ariel is how to sustain secure attachment. I understand my attachment style and where it comes from, but I still get restless and bored in time.
Hmm. So boredom is a kind of what we would call avoidant behavior. And boredom arises when we feel something uncomfortable in ourselves that we actually don't want to, we don't want to sit with. So understanding your attachment styles intellectually is all very nice. Oh yes, I'm avoidant attachment, it's because of this, blah, blah. What you need to do to change that is to allow yourself to have a different physical experience that's, like I said, mental, emotional, and physical. So having those felt experiences and letting yourself stay with the vulnerability, this is really, really key. I'd also say that all problems in the world arise out of disowned vulnerability. In the US, you have a man who is incapable of admitting any vulnerability, it seems, and that seems to be causing some problems. When we can stay with and own our vulnerability, then we allow ourselves to come into presence and connection. When you can show up and say, I'm scared, I'm anxious, I'm whatever, then you've got real intimacy. Intimacy is not hot sex, it can be. But intimacy is really about letting yourself be seen as you are in the moment. So stay with the boredom and be curious about it and see what's underneath it. There's always a vulnerability underneath. Go into that vulnerability and let yourself feel it.
Beautiful. I think we have time for one or two more questions. So Alexio's question is, for me, one of those two parts, I guess he's referring to the experiential practice, is filled with anger and what I would consider some sort of avoidance, wanting to break free from my girlfriend and being left alone. It's the feeling I used to have with my brother when we were fighting as little kids and frustration of wanting him off me. I get very fearful of that side because sometimes it can come out as outburst of anger and I'm terrified of the possibility of violence that can come with anger. I'm really always scared of my anger. How to hold that part of me? How to be okay with that part? I do not want to feel those feelings towards my partner.
Beautiful, beautiful question. Thank you. So first, here's a really good example of first wave, second wave. Second wave is what's going on in the adult relationship with his girlfriend. First wave was the tangle with his brother. So those are the root causes of that stuff. And maybe there's something a little deeper even than that earlier childhood. But that's, you know, we're getting to first wave here. So thank you for just being conscious of that. Anger is a really interesting subject for me. Anger is something that we need to be able to make friends with. When we don't, when we disown it, when we try and suppress it, it comes out in unhealthy ways. It comes out sideways. It comes out as biting my remarks. Or of course, if we suppress it enough, then it explodes and it comes out as violence. And when we turn towards our anger, when we own it, what you will see is that underneath anger is vulnerability. So the way that most people deal with anger is one of three ways. Either they deny it. Oh, no, no, I'm a happy person. I never get angry. Never trust these people, right? Because they're receiving massive rage underneath that has been suppressed for a long time. And at some point it will come out. So we either deny it or we turn it inwards and we say, oh God, I'm so stupid. I did it again. I messed up again. I can't believe I did that. Or we just take it out with violence on others, aggression. Those three are unhelpful ways to deal with anger. A healthier way to deal with anger, Robert Masters uses a beautiful phrase, heartful anger. So owning the anger and owning the vulnerability that comes underneath it. Fight, flight, freeze. It's one of the what we would call avoidant behaviors in PST. And anger is fight, of course. And so those avoidant behaviors exist because of the vulnerability underneath it. When you can say, I'm really, really angry at you because I feel so scared you're going to leave me, then you're owning your anger and you're owning your vulnerability at the same time. And that's how it starts to integrate. And the more you can integrate it, the less it's going to come out in a gnarly, jarry, aggressive way. It's a great subject. Thank you for the question.
Yeah, thank you so much. Maybe we have one more minute for one more question, again, related to anger. So Anastasia is asking, how do I deal with my partner's anger? How do I react in order to be safe, not shouted at or hit by?
Well, first, I'm sorry that you're in an experience where you may be experiencing aggression and physical violence. I would really, if there's physical violence, I would really want to you to make sure that you're physically safe, first of all. That's the most important thing. Really get support for this. Of course, there will be a first wave that has somewhere taught you the idea that it's okay to be in such an abusive relationship. And for your own process, it's worth looking at what that first wave is and what needs to be done with all of that, how you can heal that. And again, you know, when we're talking about other people, our partners, we can't actually force them to do anything. What we can do is we can tell them the impact that it has on us, and we can say to them, we can invite them into reflection and growth. Again, it's a difficult situation, but you know, keep yourself safe. That's first number one. Look at your own patterns about how you are allowing this experience to be recreated in your life or created in your life in this form, and then invite your partner into change and self-reflection. It's very, very difficult sometimes, and people don't want to look at their vulnerabilities, because remember that under the anger, under the aggression is vulnerability. If you can invite your partner into that vulnerability, remember that the vulnerability arises out of first wave, so it's childhood. It's not something between you and your partner that's really the root of it. So if it can also be really helpful to say, I know this is something from your childhood, let's look at that, rather than I did something wrong or you did something wrong, because then you get into he said, she said, and that's not helpful. So go back to the roots, but stay safe, first of all.